16 minutes past 8, time now for the Big Picture program. Brother Booker Dawji joins us as always on the line from sunny Durban. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh from sunny Durban.
Story that caught your eye this week.
Well, you know, Maulana, I won't tell the listeners how you very cruelly blackmailed me on WhatsApp last night. I mean, that was totally cold and heartless. I will never forget it. My turn will come one day, Maulana. My turn will come. What is that expression? Revenge is a dish best served cold, eh? Okay, so I'm off today, inshallah, to Spain and Morocco. And therefore, not much time to prepare for any very in-depth analyses of the major issues in the news. And therefore, I didn't have time to find any stories that caught my eye. The frivolous, the trivial, and the bizarre. But this, dear listeners, is an educational program, by the way. And so let me share with you something that I came across. Something interesting, quite fascinating, actually. The origin of words, and also some things that we didn't know about, which I will tell you. The origin of words. How did certain words come about? Words that we use frequently, but know very little about. And something just occurred to me, Maulana. There are many words that are now in use in English that have come from South Africa. For example, the word trek. Trek. It's often used overseas to indicate the movement of people. And it's part of the English language. And there are many others also. Even from India, there are many words that have come into common usage. For example, the word chai, right? It has now been, it's now in the dictionary as an English word. And you know something, one that I myself, yes, I myself discovered was the word, under. You know the word under, Maulana? It means inside, okay? You know your Urdu and Gujarati. Under means inside. So this word under, meaning inside, has made it into the English language, Maulana.
Yeah?
And I discovered, yes, of course. And the example is underpants. You see, that is what I discovered after very intensive and extensive research. Underpants, inside pants. But enough of this, and let me give you examples of the origin of certain words and some other information also, which I will start with. And I will pause to give you, the listeners, a chance to guess how they came about. So I will start off with just some information. Do you worry about things such as why men's clothes have buttons on the right side and women have them on the left side? Did that ever worry you, Maulana, or how did that come about?
No, never thought about it.
Oh, you don't think about serious things in life, eh?
Nope.
it's because when buttons were invented, they were a bit expensive and worn mainly by the rich. Since most people are right-handed, it's easier to push buttons on the right through buttonholes on the left. But in wealthy households, women were dressed by maids. Dressmakers, therefore, put the buttons on the maid's right. You see that? Yeah, the educational program. Why do ships and aircraft use Mayday as their distress call? I'm pausing. Well, it comes from the French word Maidez, M-A-I-D-E-Z, meaning help me, which is pronounced by the British as Mayday. Why are zero scores in tennis called love? Now, that's an interesting one, right? Why are they called love? Love 40 and love 30 and so on. Well, it's also from France. The round zero on the scoreboard looks like an egg. In French, an egg is Leof. So the British adopted it, and instead of saying Leof, they said love. Why do you get XXX at the end of a letter signifying kisses, Maulana? In the young days, you used to send those letters, right? XXX at the end of a letter. Well, in the Middle Ages, many people were illiterate. Documents were often signed with an X, and kissing the X represented an oath to fulfill obligations specified in the document. So you had to make a cross, an X, and you had to kiss it. And the X and the kiss eventually became synonymous. Here's another one. Why is shifting responsibility to someone else called passing the buck? Aha. Well, in card games, it was once customary to pass an item, some small little thing, which was called the buck, from player to player to indicate whose turn it was to deal the cards. If a player did not wish to assume the responsibility of dealing the cards, he would pass the buck to the next player. Aha. Why are people in the public eye said to be in the limelight? Hey, hold on. You are in the limelight. Do you know why you are described as such?
Nope.
Well, invented in 1825, limelight was used in lighthouses and theaters by burning a cylinder of lime, which produced a brilliant light. In the theater, a performer in the limelight was the center of attention. Well, why is someone who is feeling great, you describe him as, hey, you're on cloud nine. Well, types of cloud are numbered according to the altitude they attain, with nine being the highest. If someone is on cloud nine, that person is floating well above worldly cares. Now, let me ask you something very important, Molana. Let me ask you something very important. And I want a fatwa on this. Can Muslim parents keep pigtails for their little girls? Now, that's one, right? That's one for the brains. Can Muslim parents keep pigtails for their little girls? Well, okay, here's another question. Can Muslim parents get the children to put their money in piggy banks? That's one to drive the fatwa department crazy, right? But it's all very halal kosher. Okay? Halal. What's the original of the word piggy bank? Well, long ago, dishes and cookware in Europe were made of dense orange clay called pieg. P-Y-G-G, peg. When people saved coins in jars made out of this clay, the jars were known as pege banks, P-Y-G-G, peg, because that's what the clay was called. When an English potter misunderstood the word, he made a container that resembled a pig, and it caught on. So, there you are, folks. Now, that's very interesting. So, over lunch today, my dear ladies, throw one or two of these at the bully, just as he got a mouthful of dal goes full in his mouth. That should get him choking. And don't forget, this is an educational program where we equip you with only important knowledge about the world around you.
How come the word braai hasn't made it into the English dictionary?
I don't know. I think barbecue is well grounded there already.
Okay. U.S. elections.
Well, recently the controversy erupted over Dr. Ben Carson, who wants to be President of the United States, when he said that he can never accept a Muslim being President. And so then it hit the fan and everybody put his or her 2 cents in, some supporting him, others saying that it was a foolish, bigoted statement. And instantly 100,000 new voters liked his Facebook page. Well, I know one person, Molana, who doesn't like your Facebook page. And, of course, money started flowing into the account of Ben Carson. So, obviously, people liked what he said. So, listen to this. It was in the New York Times yesterday. A poll came out today. It's just one poll in one southern state, North Carolina, by one polling outfit known as Public Policy Polling, with Democratic Party ties, asking questions of a few hundred Republican primary voters. And here are the results. The question was asked, do you think a Muslim should ever be allowed to be President of the United States or not? And the answer is 16% said yes, a Muslim should be allowed to be President of the United States, and 72% said no, never can a Muslim be allowed to be President of the United States. There was another question, and this is very interesting. Do you think the religion of Islam should be legal or illegal in the United States. Well, happily, 40% said that, yes, it should be legal in the United States. But here's a shocking figure. Another 40% said Islam should be illegal in the United States. And the writer says, do these people know what it means to outlaw Muslim worship? Do they teach history in the North Carolina schools? Do they know what would happen if we closed mosques, arrested worshippers, and prayer leaders imposed religious tests for public office? Are these overwrought questions, or do the ugly answers in this poll portend something seriously wrong? An outbreak of a deadly fever this country has seen many times before. So, that's what this writer has said. So, dear listeners, now you know what many Americans think. Not only George Bush was a muhu, but it seems that that millions of Americans are made from the same mold as Donald Trump. And you know what? I really hope that he is elected. People won't just be killed by American fighter jets that he will send out there to kill Muslims, but all around the world, people will die laughing at the stupid statements of this arch mampara. And still with the U.S. elections, Maulana. Now, I've told you many times that the U.S. government is the best democracy that money can buy. And so I came across some startling information also from the New York Times. But before that, let me say that even here in South Africa, when there is a fundraising event for a political party, say a gala dinner, you pay big bucks to sit at the table with the big shot politicians. Maybe you pay 5,000 rands for a ticket or something like that at the main table, or even 50,000 rands if you are the sushi king. Depends on how big and powerful the party is. Now, I wonder how much you would pay at a COPE function. Or maybe they will pay you to come. Sorry, just joking. Anyway, dear listeners, it's guessing time again. How much do you think you and the fro, a couple, will pay to sit at the main table of a gala dinner of the Republican Party in the United States? How much will it cost you and the fro to sit at the table, at the main table? Can anyone guess? Well, let me tell you. You will pay $1.34 million. Yes, that's right. $1.34 million. That's about 18,703,586 rands. Well, that was when I looked at the rand the last time. Good heavens. I thought about it. You know, I seriously thought about it. And I certainly will not pay that amount to sit at the same table as Donald Trump. No ways. I would rather shell out my hard-earned money and sit with Hillary Clinton of the Democratic Party. You know why? Because they will only charge me $1.6 million. Sure. You know, Maulana, if I went to such a function, then they better have 22-carat gold-plated kebabs. And so, dear listeners, the government of the United States, the best democracy that money can buy.
Both Mahmoud Abbas and Benjamin Netanyahu were at the UN this week. Netanyahu looked a bit constipated when giving his speech.
Most certainly. Well, Mahmoud Bai said he will drop a bombshell, and he certainly did. Well, sort of, it seems like it. He said that he will not abide by the Oslo Accords anymore. And at this point, I want you, dear listeners, to cast your minds back to when you were a little kid. For me, that was about 35 years ago. Remember how little girls, maybe cousins or friends, they sat on the floor, small little girl, 5 years old and 6 years old, then they could play, and they played with their tea sets and plastic plates and plastic spoons and so on. It was known, I think, as Kala Kala. Right. Let's play Kala Kala. Even some boys who at that age didn't know that they were boys, they joined in this tea party. Well, boys, of course, were more keen on playing Doctor Doctor. So, everyone is very serious at this Kala Kala session. And they're pouring non-existent tea and cutting non-existent cakes. And they take it all very seriously. They pretend that it's a real tea party. So where am I going with all of this? Well, very briefly, at Oslo, you know the Oslo Accords in 1993, the deal that was signed promised the Palestinians that they will have their own country. And so Arafat and his 10,000 fighters returned from exile in Tunisia. They came back, were given a tiny parliament. Well, they were given a toy parliament. And they had elections, and many were now being called MPs of a country that didn't exist. And they waited for Israel to grant them land that could be a Palestinian state from 1993. But that land was gobbled up every day for the past 23 years. And Arafat's so-called government met many times with the Israeli government and asked for land. They waited, and Israel took more land. And everyone played kala-kala, pretended that Israel was serious about giving the Palestinians their own country. Even the Palestinians were part of this game, pretending that it's going to happen. For 23 years, they pretended Israel was happy that there was a Palestinian government known as the Palestinian Authority, the PA, because Israel could say that it was not responsible for the Palestinians. Arafat and then Abbas were in charge of them. And the only job that the Palestinian Authority had was to make sure that no militant Palestinian groups would create any kind of problems. In other words, Israel had subcontracted its security to the Palestinian Authority. Well, that's very, very shameful indeed. Arafat and Abbas were the policemen of the Israelis, and they locked up many of the Hamas militants, and many were viciously tortured. Well, it all seems to have ended when Abbas announced that the kala-kala is over. If Abbas is indeed serious, and in fact I doubt that he is, that means that the Palestinian Authority won't be the policeman for Israel. But it also means something very important, that Israel has now to take direct responsibility for the Palestinians in the occupied territories, that is East Jerusalem, the West Bank, and Gaza, which it captured in 1967. It means that Israel now has to govern over all the Palestinians directly. And that is Israel's biggest headache. It's a big nightmare because it will have to treat Israelis and Palestinians that it is governing differently, different laws and so on. And this will have to happen officially. And what's that called, having different laws? Yes, of course, you know the answer. Apartheid. So, what will happen then? Well, I hope I'm wrong, but I predict that Abbas will say, okay, I heard Netanyahu at the UN and he sounds very serious and very sincere, so let's start peace talks again. Or Israel will push its chamchas amongst the Palestinians to call for elections, something which hasn't happened since 2005, and Abbas will be out, and very likely Mohammed Dahlan, who is known as the Palestinian strongman and friend of Israel, will be the new president of the Palestinian Authority, and the game of pretense will continue, the kala-kala. But let's look at Netanyahu's speech. As you said, he was all very serious and said some very, very serious thing, constipated stuff. He said 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust, and Israel has 6 million Jews, and Iran wants to kill them. Well, it was all very dramatic stuff. He was very dramatic. He had like a 45-second period of silence where he just looked around. But he said something else. I am committed to a peace deal with the Palestinians with no preconditions. I like that, he said. And he actually emphasized it. Sorry. No preconditions. I will talk to the Palestinians with no preconditions. What a silly statement. Of course he has preconditions. The Palestinians always indicated right from the start that they want half of Jerusalem as the capital of a Palestinian state. That is East Jerusalem, where Al-Aqsa is located. Well, Israel has said that Jerusalem is the undivided capital of Israel, so don't speak about it. We have annexed it already. Finished, it's part of Israel. So don't speak about it in any peace deal. So you see, dear listeners, that is a precondition. Don't talk about Jerusalem. But there's another precondition. Netanyahu said that an independent Palestinian, he said this at the United Nations yesterday, that an independent, he supports an independent Palestinian state, but an independent Palestinian state must recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Well, that condition only came out a few years ago, and Israel knows that the Palestinians will never accept this condition, because if they did regard Israel as a Jewish state, then it would mean two things. Firstly, that the 20% Palestinian population of Israel, who are Israeli citizens, will become second-class citizens. And more importantly, the 5 million Palestinian refugees living in surrounding countries cannot come back to their homes, because this land now is regarded as a Jewish state. Netanyahu knows that the Palestinians cannot accept this, and so he put this precondition so that there can be no talks. Palestinians will be blamed for being stubborn, and Israel will continue colonizing more and more land. And I can guess that if by some strange miracle, some circumstance, some strange reason, the Palestinians happen to say, okay, we will accept Israel as a Jewish state, so come, let's talk and settle this whole thing and reach an agreement to give us land, guess what will happen? Netanyahu will move the goalposts once more with a new stumbling block. Okay, I am ready to talk with you, but first you must accept that Israel is a Jewish state and that the Jews are God's chosen people. So, if you can do that, then we can talk. And so, dear listeners, the Kala continues.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
You know, Molana, every day I get lots and lots of nice, cute, syrupy, motivational messages on WhatsApp or email. They just pour in. And I must be very honest, usually I don't read them. They're just too much. So it's the delete button. But this morning I received one that I actually read, and I thought maybe I will share it with you. So here goes. And the person who wrote this said, the story brings tears to the heart. When I was a little girl, Mom really, really liked to prepare food for dinner. And I remember one night in particular when she had made dinner after a long, hard day at work. On that evening, Mom placed a bowl of minced keema and extremely burnt chapatis in front of my dad. I remember waiting to see if anyone noticed. Yet, all my dad did was reach for his chapatis, smiled at my mom, and asked me how my day was at school. I don't remember what I told him that night, but I do remember hearing my mom apologize to my dad for burning the chapatis. And I never forget what he said. "Darling, I love burnt chapatis." Later that night, I went to kiss Dad goodnight, and I asked him if he really liked his chapatis burnt. He wrapped me in his arms and said, "Your mom had a long, hard day at work today, and she's really tired. And besides, a burnt chapati never hurt anyone, but harsh words do." You know, life is full of imperfect things and imperfect people. "I'm not the best," this girl says. "I'm not the best. What I've learned over the years is that learning to accept each other's faults and choosing to celebrate each other's differences is one of the most important keys to creating a healthy, growing, and lasting relationship. So, please pass me a chapati. And yes, the burned ones will do just fine. Life is too short to wake up with regrets. Love the people who treat you right, and have compassion for the ones who don't. Have a beautiful day." Right, let's get to the lighter stuff here. I hope you all enjoyed that one. It was quite thought-provoking, and it brings tears to the heart, as the young lady said. And let's talk a little bit about marital bliss. A bookseller conducting a market survey asked a woman, "Which book has helped you most in your life?" And the woman replied, "My husband's checkbook." A young lady preparing for a wedding goes into a bookstore. And she said, "Do you have a book? Do you have a book called The Perfect Husband?" And the sales girl said, "Madam, fiction and comics are on the first floor." Now, remember six months ago, Ronnie ended up in ICU because he can't keep his big mouth shut. So he and Pushpa were sitting in the lounge, and Pushpa said, "I wish I was a newspaper, so I'd be in your hands all day." And Rani looked up from his newspaper and said, I too wish that you were a newspaper so that I could have a new one every day. Ended up in ICU. Well, this week, he ended up in ICU once again. And Gulambhai asked him what happened, so he related the story. Ronnie was saying to Pushpa, he was sitting in the lounge again. Ronnie said to Pushpa, today is a fine day. And next day, Ronnie again says, today is a fine day. Again the next day he says the same thing. Today is a fine day. Finally after a week, Pushpa can't take it anymore. And she says to Ronnie, hey, since last week you are saying the same story. Today is a fine day. Today is a fine day. I'm fed up. What's the matter? Why are you saying that? And Ronnie replied, well, you know, last week when we had an argument, you said, just watch. Just you, just watch, eh? One fine day I will leave you. So I was just reminding you.
Okay, Levi, as always, jazakumullah for your time. And if,
always a pleasure, Maulana, and I'll see you, inshallah, after a few weeks.
Inshallah.
And don't threaten me again, okay?
No, no, but if the dal gosi is a bit burned this afternoon, remember your story.
Most certainly.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
18 minutes to 9.
The Big Picture program was sponsored by Steering Auto Inspector Car in Benoni, the thinking person's car dealership. Steering Auto, the home of pre-loved cars.